We had two particular problems in the Gemara. So we spoke yesterday. We did the Rabbeinu Yonah and the Psaka, the Rif. The problem we had with the Rif is that the Rif sounds like he's giving his own reason, ignoring the reason of the Gemara. Eyal checked the Otzar Agonim, and in the Otzar Agonim, you have a citation of the Gaonim, who basically hold, like the Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah suggested, that the reason that people don't eat wheat flour is really what, in fact, the Gemara was saying when it spoke about Ishtani. Okay, the Rif doesn't sound like that. The Rif sounds like he's giving his own reason. And it was in that context that we spoke about whether or not the Rif had a different gears than the Gemara, whether he had the reason that was offered as a defense of Rav Nachman. Now, before we talk about the defense itself, one of the points we made yesterday was that it might be, can't tell for sure, but Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah assume that Rav Nachman was the one who responded in his own defense, and therefore we should reject Rava, we should reject Rav Nachman in favor of Rava, who's a Basrai. So I pointed out yesterday that according to our Girsa, it's not Rav Nachman who's actually responding, it's actually Rava who's responding. It's actually the Stamma of the Gemara is responding, which is later than Rava. So in fact, it's the Stamma of the Gemara which is defending Rava's position, and in which case your rationale for adopting Rava over Rav Nachman has evaporated. It doesn't mean that you couldn't paskin like Rava over Rav Nachman. It just means that there's no longer a compelling case to be made on the principle, the basis of Hilchas Kavasrai. Aaron?
I mean, if Rava was after Rav Nachman, how
does
Rav Nachman respond?
Oh, he's just Talmud. They would have seen each other, so it's possible it's a response. Now, it happens to be in one of the four Kisvei Yad that we have for, if you look on line 14-15, you'll notice, what do you see there?
Amar
Lei. So you can see that there was a Girsa that reflects the position of Rabbeinu Yonah, that it's Rav Nachman himself responding. Again, even if the Rif had agreed with this point, it's conceivable that he could still have said, for whatever reason, he wants the Paskin like Rav Nachman over Rav Nachman over Rava. But anyway, the Rabbeinu Yonah's argument loses some of its steam. Eitan?
What are the relative dates for these Paris manuscripts?
I don't think you can speak about, older, particularly stronger, older and better. All these manuscripts are probably all roughly 13th century manuscripts. We don't have stuff that's really old. When I say really old, I mean 11th or 10th century. The Rambam, by the way, does refer to in Hilchos Malva Valova, I think. He makes a reference to a Ksaviyat of a Gemara, which he thought was 500 years old. It may not have been 500 years old, but it's a famous passage. Even those who don't learn Rambam know that passage. So he may not how he would have known, I don't know. It's not clear whether you really had written manuscripts then. But by the 10th century, there is material, some Genizah material, I think, where you do have a Gemara. And we may have some 11th and 12th century manuscripts, but not most of our manuscripts are not that early. So anyway.
How do you get this?
This is from the Lieberman CD. The date is there. I had to copy it out and whatever. But if you want this, I haven't finished the parak. I haven't finished the whole first half of the parak. But if you want what there is, you just email me and I'll send you the Excel file. I haven't finished the edit. It has to be lined up. So this part's been done. So anyway, so number one, you have Amar Lei. So that's one point. The second point is our problem was as follows. What was our second problem? Our second problem was that after the Sfar is introduced, the way we read the Gemara, we read it as follows, starting with right here in 1421. Is that really true? Viha Amar Rabbi Zeira, and so on and so forth. Now, we had two problems with this. One, which Eyal and Shaul already highlighted last week, is that it's a very strange comment that the Gemara should introduce the question with. Why? Because what is the Raya? What is the substance of the argument from Rav Zeira's statement about Kimcha Desare and Karachaya? But it's really from Kimcha Desare. The substance of the argument, Jeremy, is?
Well, the problem is what they're quoting is that those, you do make a shock.
No, okay, but we're talking about Kimcha Dechite. So the basis of the Gemara, how did the Gemara,
those are exclusionary.
Right. In other words, it was based upon a diuk that the Maimra says, Kimcha Desare, and the Gemara thought. it rejects it, and I thought it meant dafka kimcha desari, but not kimcha dechite. So that is not, there's no svara for that. It's just, it's like having an explicit brisa or maimer that says you make bari peradama on kemach chitim. It happens to be not explicit, but the Gemara thought it was explicit. It thought it was implied by this maimer very clearly. In the end, it says it's not implied. But the raya was not from the fact that something that has an iluya acharina that you still make a bari pri hadama on it. The raya was from the fact that you have a statement that says on kimcha dechite, or the Gemara thought that says on kimcha dechite you make a bari pri hadama. Tzvi pointed out yesterday something even sharper. The notion that if something has an iluya acharina that you make a bari pri hadama on it, which is what the Gemara introduces this question with, what comes out of this statement? What comes out of the Maimra? If I asked you, based upon this Maimra alone, what would you say about something that has an Iluya Harina? It has been changed, but it has an Iluya Harina. What would you say? Bari Pri Adam or Shakel? Based upon this Maimra alone. Svi pointed out that the only thing that it talks about in this category is Kimcha Desare. What is Kimcha Desare? Kimcha Desare is something that has an Iluya Harina. How? Pas. Just like Chitim. And what is the din on Kimcha Desare? You make a shahakal. So the particular svara that the Gemara is presenting as being problematic, as being against Rav Nachman, in fact, the Braisa says what's explicit in the Braisa is exactly the hefech. Kimcha Desare, you make a shahakal, even though it has an Iluya Harina. So it's very strange for the Gemara to introduce, and we understand what the Raya is ultimately, but if anything, to introduce the question, the chihecha, cholhecha, the ika, iluya, achrina, mevarach, and alash, shahakol, v'ham, Reb Zeira, what are you talking about? Yes, v'ham, Reb Zeira, he says, kemasorim, you make a shakal on, it has an iluya, achrina. So it's bizarre for the Gemara to introduce that question with this kind of a statement. So I have no doubt, we introduced this in the discussion of the Rif, what Girsi really had in the Gemara. What you will now look here, you will see a couple of things. I'm sorry.
Until when does the Rif say Rav Nachman is responding?
The Rif doesn't say. The Rif just says Machlokas Rav Nachman and Rabbi Yehuda. Umistabra ki Rav Nachman. Because people don't normally eat kemasar. Okay, a reason which is not mentioned at all in the Gemara yet.
But then Rabbeinu Yonah says that he's saying
Rav
Nachman is responding to...
Rabbeinu comes and says that the reason of in kemen delo achli inshi kimcha dechite is simply the Rif's way of understanding the words of the Gemara hol v'ishtani of isle liyachrina bepas. Right? Now that's the way the Rif understood that statement. That's all Rabbeinu Yonah says. So his kasha on the Rif is predicated on an assumption that why should you paskin like? He's bothered by two questions. Firstly, where did this reason come from? Second, and there's how can you paskin like Rav Nachman based upon a reason he himself didn't say?
Right.
So that he gives the teretz for. But the first question of you should paskin like Rav Nachman because Hilchas Kavasrai, that he doesn't answer. So in Rav Nachman, but the Talmidei Rav Yonah assume that the response in the Gemara of Ishtani. Is in fact Rav Nachman speaking.
Right. So only that statement.
They don't say how far they go, but once that statement encapsulates the defense against Rava, so it's a machlokas then of svara between Rava and Rav Nachman.
So I'm just clarifying. We're not saying that they think that Rav Nachman is saying even farther than that. From then it's
they don't say. I could very well be. They assume it's all Rav Nachman. Once you have the Amar Lei that we have here, Midami Hasam Les Lechrina Hach Is Lechrina Ayde Pas. That up until that point is for Rabbeinu is Rav Nachman. The next line is the line in question. It's the line that creates the problems. The Chi Is Lei Ilu Yachrina Mevarech Alav. Now. So what Svi suggested and others suggested is that maybe that line is benichusa. Maybe, in other words, the Gemara, the Rav Nachman said, "Mi dami." There's no ilu yachrina bepas. Here, there's ilu yachrina bepas. V'chi is le ilu yachrina bepas. Lo yachrina lo mevarchan ala bar pri adama. What's that? Yeah, because it's a continued part of the statement. In other words, this has an Aliyah, that has an Aliyah, and whenever there is an Aliyah, you don't make a Bari Priya Adama. That it's actually perfectly plausible. I didn't read it that way, but there's nothing that compels it. Now, I'm sorry? Now, the one reading, there are two readings here. V'chevan makes it absolutely clear that it's ben Yehusa, that it's a continuation of the previous statement, if that's the Gersa in Munich. V'chevan de'islei le'achmina v'pas, lo'ma v'rechal Bari Priya Adama, V'chevan, it just means it follows from the previous statement.
Can you send us that?
If you want, if someone reminds me, I can send out the Excel file. Again, it goes like another blot or two. It goes about, you know, like 2-3 blot into the parrot. You can do it yourself if there are any volunteers who want to do it, but you need a minimum amount of training for it. So, and I doubt the volunteers are raising their hands. I know that the semester is getting busy. Okay. Now, the other thing is that the other position that makes it quite clear. What? Hold on. One manuscript doesn't have it. More importantly, and I made one mistake here, the Inni, which appears in three manuscripts, including the one that doesn't have it, makes it amply clear that what preceded was Ben Yehusa, because Inni marks the beginning of the question. What's that? Well, the Florence manuscript is missing, and I put Inni in the wrong place. It really belongs going further down. So, the point is three of the manuscripts have any, which makes it clear the statement before was indeed Ben Yehusa. So that really does away with the two problems that were raised in terms of the reading of the Gemara. It still doesn't explain the riff. Correct. If I took everything out, and in other words, the Florence manuscript, if I did away with that answer, and we assume that Midami was the Bahag's answer, or, you know, a Gaonic answer in interpolation, accidental interpolation to the text, then the riff would, then we understand the riff more, because the Gemara never introduced the Svara. The Gemara just presented a Kasha Rava had against Rav Nachman. So in other words, Rava said that Afagav Shem Sahachanami, Afagav Shem Sakoi. End of discussion, and then the Gemara never explained Rav Nachman's Svara, and that's why the riff comes along and says, Umistabra ki Rav Nachman, despite what Rava said, because people don't eat it normally. We spoke yesterday? No, all of them have a ha'amar, I think. Yeah. What's that?
If you found the manuscript without the meat dummy.
Yeah. But we, again, look, honestly, our extant kisfayah, generally speaking, are weak. They all tend to be I shouldn't say not always, but most of these kisfayat are sort of roughly the same provenance, and some of the most interesting girsos that you find in the Rishonim do not always show up in our manuscripts. Sometimes they do, no question, sometimes they do. We do not have as broad of a sampling as we would like, you know, at least over a broad, you know, section of Shas.
Where does Florence end?
What do you mean, where does it end?
Where does it end, the part that doesn't have? I mean, where does it end and then continue?
You just don't have it. You just have begin with Inni, V'Amar of Zera, Amar Shmuel. So you just begin with Inni, V'Amar of Zera, Amar Shmuel. So it takes away, it doesn't solve the full problem for the riff, it takes away the question that, the both very good questions that were asked. Okay. Anyway, that's enough on Kimcha Dechite. The Rambam paskins that on Kimcha Dechite, you make a shahakal. He doesn't talk about Klayos. And we've seen the pshara that was suggested by the Rishonim, and Rishonim seem to accept as a difference between raw wheat flour and wheat flour from kernels that were roasted, which would be considered edible. Okay, it makes sense to me. I don't eat either, but fine. Yes.
Was the Talmud Yerevan Yonah basically, in the end, trying to just sort of harmonize the riff with Nachman and just?
With the Gemara, in other words, why does the riff ignore the reason? How does the riff paskin like Rav Nachman and for the wrong reason? If you're going to paskin with Nachman, at least paskin like his reason.
But they also found that they needed to end up using sort of Tosfos' understanding of what Kamach really was.
No, that was not necessary. That's a side point, which is to say that it may happen to be anyway. In other words, Rabbeinu Yonah suggests, quoting the Balei Tosfos, that the Kemach and the Gemara is not raw wheat flour, but roasted wheat flour, you know, flour of roasted wheat. So Rabbeinu Yonah says that the riff may be right, the riff was wrong, but we paskin like him anyway, because the Gemara wasn't talking about that. In other words, he would say the riff was wrong on two counts. Number one, he got the wrong flour. Number two, he read the Gemara wrong, assuming whatever flour it was talking about. So, in this case, two wrongs make a right. That's what it boils down to. Okay. Are there any questions about that? All right. So that's really, that sort of sums up yesterday. So bottom line is, I have to check the Shulchan Aruch. I suspect I'm kimcha d'chite, we certainly we're going to make a shahakal. If it's roasted, probably we make a ha'adama. Okay. Now I wanted to talk about...
we have all sorts of things in cereal. Gosh. That aren't necessarily...
I would question whether... I'm not going to say anything.
We have gun-puffed wheat, roasted and toasted.
Okay, no, but no one's eating flour that way. You're eating it. In other words,
a cookie,
Ben, right? The point is that women eat the flour, and they sound like it's still not in flour form. It's much larger pieces.
Mixed with
water.
Ezra. So in the end, if you do by some mad reason decide to like flour it down, you say shakol.
Say shakol. Yes, you do. Well, that's dough. That's different.
What was
the question? You're talking about dough, like the leftover dough.
Cookie dough. Doesn't the Rambam say that it's
dough? I don't think he talks about... I don't know if the Rambam talks about unbaked.
I think he talks about it. If you take the flour and you mix it with water,
it
becomes thick.
I mean, that's like oatmeal. It really is what you're talking about. So it really depends on whether people eat it or not. That's what it boils down to. And so if normal people eat it... What's that? That's a shock. Okay, wheatino, whatever. Michael, question? Okay. Now, as an introduction to the next section, I just want to do now, because we have the projector in here, and maybe the main reason I brought it in was for the botany questions. So tomorrow, hopefully, I'll bring in... I'll get the capers. We eat capers. We try not to pull them. But I want to actually show you some of at least the pictures, so we know what we're talking about. I suspect most of us have not. I mean, I did see caperberries today, but you normally don't typically see them. What's that? But I wanted to just look at some of the pictures to understand some of the metzias. Now, the first three pictures here actually are of the tzlaf. Now, firstly, what you can see from this picture is why it's a tree, right? If you look at the stem here. And the Rishonim, the Aruch describes it as such, is that basically the wood trunk remains, not very thick. So that's why it's kind of a shrub, but the wood actually stays from year to year, and that's why it's conceivably in the category of eights. Yes?
Well, we've all seen them. They're the bushes that grow on Kotel. The big bushes that grow on Kotel?
I haven't noticed them.
So.
Okay, fine. So anyway, many of these things are going to have a lot of names. They have a lot of names. And that makes things a little bit confusing. However, that said, basically the way it works is as follows. Unfortunately, I do not have Felix's picture here, which is a little bit easier to see on. I would, in fact, recommend those who are really interested in making your life a little bit easier. Again, it's not inexpensive, so, I mean, it comes in a set. You have the Aruch Al Hashas, which is basically the Aruch reordered following the Gemara, which is very useful. And he actually has, you know, a lot of pictures, which is quite useful. What's that? So anyway, it is by my makom, and if you're being troubled by a picture and you stop by, you're welcome to look at it. So anyway, what you have here, let's see, do I have one shot? What's going to happen is as follows. You see on the front here, Chaim, I bet you these are still immature. These are still not before it's flowered, right? They're not big enough yet. They look like they're the Kafrisin around, which have encompassed the tamaras. Now, what happens, there are radishes. Okay, if you can see the berries here, right? Now, they're all over the place. For example, right here. Yeah, right, you see where the pointer is, Ezra?
Yeah.
Okay, here's a berry. Now, let me just show you what they look like in isolation, which is this, okay? The final fruits are on top. Those are the caper fruits. Those are what's called the aviyona. Now, one of the things to keep in mind when you learn the Gemara, and this has thrown me for a loop more than once. In fact, there's a famous statement about this in a Gemara elsewhere. I forget where it is. On a caper berry bush, you have a situation in which you can have multiple stages of the fruit at the same time. That's normal. Now, the caper fruit itself, the final product, is known as an aviona. When you look at the plural in the Gemara, you say avionim, you think about the poor people. But actually, this fruit is mentioned in Tanakh once, in Sefer Koheles, Vionetz Hashakei B'Yistabel HaChakov B'Sofer HaAviona. It's in the passage of telling all you youth that remember your creator in your youth, because one day you're going to get old. Okay, and the parts ain't going to work so much anymore. And Aviona would appear, the expression of Sefer Aviona appears to be the ancient Viagra. It seems some believe that an aphrodisiac, and the Sefer Aviona means it loses its power. It means that you get so old and decrepit that the Aviona doesn't help you in this domain. So anyway, so the fruit Aviona is already mentioned in Tanakh.
Now, the rule is Avionim,
not Avionos. Well, that's the Gemara. I'm sorry, Avionos then. I didn't mean that. Yes. Yeah, and as you still think it's the pronunciation of poor people. Fine, the female poor people. Okay. So it probably should be avionos. I suspect it's not an unchanging vowel. So anyway, the way things are eaten, the caper fruits, the fruits of the caperberry bush can typically be eaten one of two ways. Either you allow the fruit to ripen fully, which I don't know if you'll find them. The ones that you see in the store are not that way. Or before they actually develop fully, you pluck the immature buds and then you pickle them. And Chaim says they're edible even when they're mature. But after they're not so immature, they get a little bigger, but they haven't flowered yet. Then the inside's inedible, and I guess that's when you must pickle them in order to be able to eat them.
So the capers that we're familiar with are immature.
Are the immature buds? Yes. These would probably be called the immature buds. Really, the true when they first come out are the tamaros that the Gemara refers to. I'm relying upon my information here, and thankfully, Refersh and I are relying upon Chaim for this, who is helpful. Felix's diagram was very unclear. It's actually very clear if you know what he's talking about. If it's, you don't know what he's talking about, it's totally unclear. Because he shows you the different stages, you don't realize that it's all different stages of the same thing. The immature, what happens, if you look on here, look at this one, for example. These are the flowering buds, but the flowers haven't come out yet. So you can see that the sort of leaves around the original tamara, around the original berry. At that stage, the berry may be inedible, but the leaves can be eaten. Those leaves are called the kafrisin. So they are around the berry. Then what happens to these? To these, you see, so the flowering buds then eventually turn into this. Okay, not ignore the things that are on the front. You know, this and this. Those are fruits in a different... They're buds before they flowered. Okay?
They're going to become like that.
They're eventually going to turn into this flower. Now, the centerpiece here, called the stamen, is eventually going to turn into the fruit that you see at the end, which is this. Okay? That's what happens, it seems, with most fruit trees, as you see with the pomegranate as well. It's kind of amazing, actually.
Which part turns into...
You see the center stem right here?
Yeah.
The thick one, the stamen? That's going to turn into the aviona.
Even the image... It starts as an immature.
It starts as an image, like an image, as a little immature berry that begins to, the inside turns hard, the leaves develop or remain around that are still edible, then it flowers.
And within it comes.
And then comes the stamen, and the stamen's going to develop into the real fruit. Which is why Rabbi Akiva's position is that the only thing that's called pre, ha'etz, is the aviona. Okay? Now, the fact is the other parts are edible. The berry at its first stage, the tamaris, are edible. The kafrisin, again, the little leaves around the tamara, in effect, are edible. When it flowers, it's not clear what the ulin are. The one thing that's not 100% clear, what are the ulin? The ulin are going to either be these leaves once it's flowered, but they're underneath, and you've got to sort of reach under to find them, or the ulin might actually be the white petals. It could be that they're eaten as well. I'm sorry? The tamaris can be eaten, Chaim says, even without processing, when you get them really early. What's that? Fine. And then when they get a little further, you can eat the kafrisin around them, or you can pickle them, and that's what our capers are. And then it flowers, and now you have the ulin, are either the white things or still the green things buried underneath them that were originally called kafrisin. And then the stamen develops into the aviona. Okay, so those are the four stages. Tamara, kafrisin, olin, and aviona. And that's what it is. It's all the same thing. It's just that you will see on a caperberry bush, you will see on a caper bush, what do they call it? You will see on the bush things, you know, all different stages at the same time.
And the whole thing is called a mitzvah.
What's that? The whole thing is called the tzlaf or the nitzvah. Yes, that's the name of the species.
I have a better picture of an aviona.
That looks like an aviona from the very quick glance that I got. I mean, I think this picture is plenty good, but, you know, you have all sorts of different berries, but that's fine. Same thing. All right, is there anything that's not clear? Because I would go, I mean, I don't want to bore anybody, I'll go over one more time. Is it clear?
Yeah.
Okay. If anybody wants these pictures, just email me and I'll be happy to email you if you find them to be helpful. We're not going to need this as quickly, but I want to just give you a sense. We're going to need this. It's going to take us a few days to get there to the pomegranates. Okay, I assume everybody here knows what a pomegranate looks like. I assume that, but it's not necessarily true. I know I never ate a pomegranate until after some time I was married. And I don't remember seeing them as a kid. You know, it's easier to find them now than it once was. You have to remember that fruits have gotten more common. But I just, it's something I didn't eat. Anyway, so these are the
pomegranates.
What?
Is that why you had pomegranates?
No. The pomegranates, because my wife saw some very nice ones in Trader Joe's. That's why. What's that? I'm not even sure what we had in my family growing up. I certainly didn't eat it, and I don't remember it. Now, these are the pomegranates, but they're pretty much fully grown. Pomegranates are like kind of like apples. I mean, they taste like apples. They're called the Chinese apple. Now, what the pomegranates actually... I don't have all the pictures. Where are my pictures? You can see the flowers on the tree. Oh, here's a close-up. Okay, and you can see... What do you call all those little things in the middle, Chaim? Yeah, the pistils. Those are actually, I think, called the nates, if I'm not mistaken.
This is before.
That's correct. What I don't have here that I want to see, and I suspect that pomegranates, like apples for the most part, you don't get them usually all radically different stages. In other words, they mostly all grow sort of in unison. That's why at tzlaf, one of the things very different about at tzlaf, be aware, I don't know what the seasons are for at tzlaf, but at tzlaf is... What's that? One second. What I was going to say was it grows largely in the Mediterranean area. There are other areas. It needs dry, rocky soil. It grows in hot climate. Probably the hotter, the better. I don't know in terms of its fruit production whether there's a clear down season or not. I have no idea. But certainly, it clearly is sufficiently aseasonal that you have, you know, you can have buds and you can have flowers and you can have fully formed fruits at the same time on it. Something which is not something you typically find in most kinds of, in many kinds of trees. So the pomegranate you typically don't find that. Now here is before the fruit is fully developed. If you look at the end of a pomegranate, you will see sort of the leftovers of the pistils. You can what's that? I don't think so.
Middle.
Yeah, I know, but I don't think. But if you look inside, you can't see. But if you were to take the side and look inside, you'll see them. They're sort of hardened and dry. Right. But they usually at this point they're hard. In the fruit stage, they're soft. Okay. Now I believe that those are going to be called the nates of the rimon. Now one of the statements claims the Gemara is going to make, we're going to talk about shomer lepri. A shomer lepri is something that sort of guards over the fruit and its development. The claim the Gemara is going to make is that if you take those, you take these out of the rimon and its development, the rimon will die and will never develop. If you do the same thing for a tzlaf, the tzlaf will not die. I don't know. I think what they may mean is when they say taking them off, I don't think they mean, is there one main stamen in a pomegranate, two probably?
One.
So I think they mean the things around the stamen. Mm-hmm. The claim is that if you take the nates off, that it will die. If you do it with a tzlaf, it doesn't die.
The pistil is the female part of the
plant.
I think you're outvoted here. You're outvoted. It's irrelevant. What's the difference? The bottom line is the Gemara asserts that claim. The Gemara claims it didn't experiment. What's that? Right. And technically not experiment, the story, but it means they saw it demonstrated. And so that's the conclusion, because you're going to have to explain why the Kafrisin shouldn't automatically have the din of pre for Orla, since it's a Shomer Lepri. Okay, so that may even be just the flowers as well.
So where does the pomegranate fruit grow in relation to the flower?
It grows inside the flower. Where you see the flower there, the flower is going to fall off. The petals are going to fall off. But in the middle here, somewhere there, maybe you can even see it there, is the stamen. That's going to develop into the fruit, into the pomegranate. And it's going to push it, and that's where you're going to see you'll see sort of pushes its way out. Okay. One other piece here. What is this? Oh, unfortunately, this is not, if I make it bigger, I don't know if I lose the resolution. This is pomegranates. You can see, actually, in an intermediate stage already, where it's starting to, it's not just the flower anymore, but it's getting into, you can see they're at a more advanced stage of the flower before the fruit is fully developed. Unfortunately, that's all. Okay, one second.
You see it's starting to round out a little bit.
Right. Okay. Oh, here's another view where you can see the lower one.
Do the petals fall off? I thought the petals form the opening.
I think the petals fall off, actually. I could be behind you or no.
Yeah.
Eventually they will fall off.
It could be the nates or the pistils or the flower, the petals
themselves. Yeah. I'm not sure which. The reason why I think it's not, I think, is because it's not the perach. Perach are the flower, are the petals of the flower. But they may be in the same gather, in halachically. Okay, and here, the last display, you will see the radishes. Okay? No.
Those are beets.
Beets. These are radishes. The radishes, this is the part that is in the ground. And then there is a large, you know, the radishes, I think, are related to the cabbage family. And you will see, you know,
you see the green stuff on top?
You see the green stuff on top. Apparently it is edible. It's not as good as most other kinds. It's not what we typically use it for. When you read the Gemara, though, it may... What's that?
What's not edible?
No, it is edible. The main part that we, when you look around, you see radishes in the salad. It's the bottom. It's the bulb in the ground. But even the leafy part on top may be edible. It's not that good apparently, but it's not that it's inedible. What's that? And how would you rank him on a scale of 1 to 10?
Not nearly as good as beet leaf.
Okay, there you go. Okay, fine. So anyway, with that said, note though that any of you all read the sugi of Korah, right? I don't have any pictures of Korah. I apologize. I couldn't. The connection here is very slow. And so I wasn't able to find any pictures. It takes a long time for stuff to download. Any good hearts of palm. I'll talk about that in a second. But according to the Gemara, which is the part that they used to eat of the radish? What does it sound like? No, they definitely ate it then. Which was the primary purpose is what I want to know. It's not 100% clear. It sounds a little bit from the Gemara, from the Kasha, the Gemara. Sounds from the Kasha of the Gemara a little bit like they really ate the leaves, yeah. But people also want the bulb.
Wait, which one's the radish?
What?
The outside.
It's known. So I'm not 100%. It's not 100% mukhrach, but when you read, it's a little bit mash, but not 100%. Okay. Are there any questions at the moment for this?
This is the Tznon, right?
Tznon, yeah.
So it says Tznon.
The pugla is the bottom part. The question is, when the Gemara asked the question in the first place, if the only part of the radish that was ever eaten was the bottom, the question of the Gemara is strange. Right? Clearly, when you... the Gemara's answer...
Pugla means the bottom part?
The pugla is the bottom part, yes. Pugla is the bottom part. Okay.
I don't know. Rashi seems to think that pugla is a certain stage.
No, I understand. It means that bulb on the bottom at a certain point. Firstly, today it's pretty hard. I don't know how hard a radish gets and how soft it, you could eat if you eat at an earlier stage. But I think it's good they're talking about the bottom of the radish. And I guess if you leave it on the ground long enough, it may become inedible. You know, why you would do that, I guess because maybe they just wanted the leaves on top or something like that. So anyway, but certainly...
They say it gets so hard.
Right, so I assume that's the case, but typically today radishes are used for the bottom, so they're harvested when they're edible. Aaron?
Are they growing all this stuff in Bala and Eretz Yisrael, or is it fine to all the places?
The question I take it that you're asking is, are they fully aware of the Metzias? Is that, my assumption is yes. I assume that they could have grown slough does grow in areas, even not just around the Mediterranean. It just needs a certain kind of climate. Today, it's even grown in California.
So they have stuff.
What have you got there?
They have all this stuff in Babylon.
Okay.
Here's where the fruit actually develops in the ovary. This whole thing is called the pistil. This is the female part. Right. The pollen goes from the stamens, goes down here, and this develops into the fruit. All this falls down. These are what we call the alim, possibly.
That are
right. Meaning after
underneath
the whole thing
those that were there. Okay.
Right. Or here's another demonstration of what those alim might.
Got it. Okay. Be. Okay. Good. So why don't you pass this around? Let me just show. Chaim is suggesting what happens here is as follows. This is the what do you call this? The ovary.
The ovary. Yeah.
Sort of pushes up, and these little guys, are these the pistils?
No, those are the stamens.
They're the stamens.
Those have the pollen on them.
Have the pollen on them, which fertilizes that. Are these self-fertilizing flowers, or do they need a...
Well, you have a bee.
A bee come in, or whatever, and spread it around. And then this eventually becomes the fruit, and this stuff, meaning the stamens and the leaves, fall off, and the leaves that were there originally around the bud... Okay, which were the kafrisin, are now called the ulin, because they're no longer tight around, but rather they've opened up. Now, the thing issue that the Gemara is going to talk about is that these kafrisin were once a shomer lepri. But they're not a shomer lepri at the stage that it actually is a pri. It's only at a later stage. In other words, when it's something that's called pri, it's only at a later stage. We will see that on Lamed Vav Amud Beis. But anyway, so just send this around. But
what are they a shomer against?
They protect the fruit.
From what?
From anything around outside.
Really, those little.
Yes, they protect it from the air.
I mean, bugs can get to it. They didn't seem like they gave so much protection from the picture. The mice, you're saying, actually.
They do. They provide something. Okay.
The kafrisin turn into the ulin.
The kafrisin become Chaim things. I think he's right. The ulin once its flowers fully open. You don't even see them because they're underneath. Okay. Are there any questions? Or I think that we have sufficient.
Which part of the ranch is not?
Is not the pugla, the whole leafy part on top that's outside of the ground. Okay, fine. I thought I had one more radish picture, but I guess I didn't. What's that? But I can't go now. Okay, one second. That was radish 1.bmpx. Okay, fine. Are there any questions about this? Okay, I hope, in order, I don't know if Rashi knew what a caper berry bush looked like. But I'm every reason to assume that that the Amoraim understood what they were talking about. In terms of Matthias. Okay, fine. You can shut the projector. I don't think we'll need it anymore.
I have a screen.
Yeah. All right. Now, just a discussion about a Hearts of Palm. A little bit point that Matthias. Well, no, it's not out. That's the last one. What's that? I just make one comment. Hopefully tomorrow we'll have some sugar cane in shear. One comment that should be made, that the Kesef Mishnah, the Rambam says that sugar, Ben, is it off? You got to shut it off. You don't want to cover that lens. The Rambam says that sugar you make a shahakal on. And the Gaon had said you make either a eitz or a dama on it. And the Rambam says it's no different than dvash, and the Tur defends the position of the Gonim and points out why he thinks the Rambam's extrapolation or kash against the Gonim is not correct.
Dvash as honey,
as being a derivative of.
Date honey.
You make a shakal on. According to the Rambam and according to the way most Rishon read the Gemara. So then the Kesef Mishnah writes about the Tur that he said, defending the Rambam now, he writes that had the Tur actually seen what, sugar cane looked like, he might not have said what he said. Okay, and how it's used.
Now, do we claim now that sugar cane grows in Israel then?
Sugar cane, I don't know if it grows in Israel, but it's certainly... It certainly grew around the Mediterranean. I think sugar usually requires a warm climate, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So you can assume that it could have grown most places around the Mediterranean, including Eretz Yisrael. I don't know if it was grown in Eretz Yisrael, And it can be grown in Florida. It's not going to grow so well, probably, you know, in New York or in northern France, you know, in northern Europe.
Once we ask, do these plants appear in Tanakhana? That's interesting. And
I don't know. I, you know, some attribute. What did they say? There's one of the Rishonim say that Ya'ari is sugarcane in Shirashirim or something?
I know. I have a
Ya'ari im Deshi or something like that.
I know a very a brilliant rabbi who says that when the army of Shaul was marching and they found Yarot Shalvash, that it was sugarcane growing and not honey.
Okay. That's actually, that's clever.
Yeah,
except for it doesn't fit with the rest because he puts a stick in it and dips it in.
Okay, well, maybe sugarcane leaves.
Okay. Anyway, I don't want to, I'm not going to, you know, pursue that. But, so one comment about the hearts of palm. Why did people normally not plant a palm tree al das to eat the korah? Eitan?
Their primary thing was the dates that you chop the core down to grow.
That's correct. If you take the heart of a palm, the palm tree dies. Now, do not think, therefore, when you walk into the supermarket, and this is very much Lamaisa. What bracha is the maskana of the Gemara on Korah? Shakol. I would argue, that probably today on Hearts of Palm, you make a Bari Pri Ha'adama. Correct. What they have developed, the problem is obviously it's very inefficient to have hearts of palm if it kills the tree every time you do it, especially if you got to get it young, it's never going to grow to produce dates. They have developed breeds of palm trees, you know, in the Caribbean, Central America, where, you know, they end up growing more of these stems or whatever they are that you can just take that produce multiple ones on a palm tree, and you don't have to, I mean, they're grown for that purpose. In which case, arguably, it may even be bari pri. I don't know if it's bari. The question is whether it's really pri ha'etz or not. It's not a pri. So it might just be bari pri adama, but it's not shahakal. Notice the machlokas in the Gemara here was bari pri adama and shahakal, not bari pri ha'etz and shahakal. In other words, to be bari pri ha'adama and pri ha'etz means, the word pri means two different things. Pri ha'etz may mean fruit, pri ha'adama means product of. Ezra?
Not that this is an authoritative source, but in Wikipedia they made it sound like they knew both still. Yes, I guess you have to find out where your hearts upon are.
That's true. That would be true.
And
but
also, the website kashrut.org is run by Rabbi Abadi, of the list. He said ha'etz.
That's interesting.
He could be a dat yachid because you never know when he's quoting someone or when he's just saying.
Okay. Anyway, Shalom?
Even if they are grown that way, most of the hearts upon are by the stirrup.
That's a different question, but that's just how people normally eat that. That's not that just like a Zayas Kavush, you still make ites on a Zayas Kavush. So if that's the way people normally eat them, so then you would still make it, would retain its bracha. All right, so let's read the Gemara of David.
I mean, maybe we'll guess this, but do you then assume that when Shmuel says because it's so full lahak shuk, that's a have a mean that we reject it? If that takes into consideration, we follow Shmuel, even if in general we grow them for that purpose, since they're so full of actually, would give
I think that the Gemara rejects that as a criteria. Because if that were your criteria, then snow and you would make a shackle on. The answer is that even though it hardens, if not the inish adaita de x, then you make hadam on it.
They also sell bamboo shoots that are edible pigments next to the.
I think so. If that's edible, yeah. I think they probably have to take them young. Yeah, because if you actually see, if you see bamboo as a grass that grows tall and eventually hardens, but if you see bamboo when it's young, the shoots are very soft. You know, that pandas, that's their primary diet. They don't think that they go around, the Washington Zoo does not go around to people collecting after sukkahs when they decide they took over the schach mats and they no longer use their bamboo poles. They don't go feeding that to the pandas. That stuff's not edible. It's when it's much, much softer. Okay. Anyway, let's read. Who would like to read? Who has not yet read? Bezos Hashanah. Nobody who would like to read hasn't read. Okay, who would like to read who has read? Ezra, go ahead. Did you, by the way, is that your Masoret HaKriya Amar? Oh, you can't tell. I'm sorry, you're Sephardi. You can't tell whether it's Amar or Amar. Sorry.
Oh, is that what you're reading
out? You don't know. Okay, fine. You would read it the same way. Never mind. Well, I'm just curious to know if there's a Masoret on the vocalization of Kamatz or Chatbata. Go ahead. I'm sorry. So you have a Machlokas Rav and Shmuel as to what bracha you make. Now, what is the basis of their argument? So the Gemara explains. Go ahead. Who says that? Who's talking now?
The Gemara.
The Gemara. It's not Rabbi Yehuda speaking. Now, how did they know this? Hold on 1 second. Shmuel Amar. Okay, how did... Now, again, that's not Shmuel speaking, that's the Gemara speaking. Is that what Shmuel really held? Is that really Shmuel's reason? The answer is absolutely yes. How did the Gemara know that was his reason? Because the next line. The next line is part of Shmuel's dialogue. So you know, how do you know what Shmuel held? Because Amar Lei...
Does Amar Lei always mean that they really spoke?
You have to assume that until you know otherwise, yes. I'm not telling you that there never are cases that way. When you're talking about Amoraim and Bavel, certainly... You know, if you're talking about Yochanan Shlakish, maybe not. If you're talking about Rav and Shmuel Amaram and Bavel, you assume that unless you have reason to think otherwise.
Is there some other expression that I'm confusing you with that usually means...
That Amar Lach. Amar Lach, technically. Amar Lach. That means, that's clear he didn't say, but he would say, yes. So...
But we have found cases...
So Amar Le Shmuel Rav Yehuda.
Amar Le Shmuel Rav Yehuda.
Shinana.
Sharp one?
Either that or toothy one. Buck teeth. The Rav Haigon says it means big tooth. Okay, apparently it wasn't an insult. It was just that he had, I guess, protruding, you know, teeth, and that's what they referred to him as. Okay. So what's that?
So how come in all the Shas, only Shmuel calls
him that? Well, Shmuel's his Rebbe.
And other people can't call him that.
No, Shmuel was his Rebbe. He's the one who's normally talking to him and might talk to him, you know. I don't know if that, you know, that's a... It doesn't really matter. I'm not going to get bogged down. But anyway, so it either means sharp one or it means one of big teeth. Okay? Rav Haigon says it's not an insult. It was just a description. Okay. Maybe that's why he could eat a kara de dikla even when it's harder. Okay, fine. Go ahead. Okay, so that's what Shmuel said. So from that you know what Shmuel, what it would appear Shmuel's svara was that sofa lahakchos is why you don't make a bari pri ha'adama on a korah, and he's pointing out that even though snow would seem to be a raya for your position. Okay, notice though Shmuel didn't say you're right; he just said kavasech mistabra. Okay, and now if anybody else says Mistabra kavase de x means he holds that way, but when Shmuel, it didn't say the hadarbe. It just said, yeah, what you're saying makes sense because it's known. David,
how do we know that whole statement is what Shmuel said to Rabbi Huda?
Because it says,
could it not be Shmuel or Rabbi Huda? Shouldn't I come and take Mistabra? And then
because because the Gemara would never have, it would have been no point in quoting it. There would have been no point in citing that statement. In other words, what's the point in having a statement that says Kavasech Mistabra, especially if the Gemara is going to go on to ignore it? Right? If all Shmuel said it was Kavasech Mistabra, then the Gemara Mistabra should have passed like Rabbi Yehuda.
Right.
It's very clear. You assume that that's part of the statement.
Unless they actually said Perahu versus Enso Blahakshod, and that's one.
No. It doesn't work that way, because if the Gemara, if it was a direct quotation, the Gemara would have said, when they break it up that way, it's because it's the Perush. Many of the Tosus in the 9th Perek of Bavmetzia, I think, 9th or 10th Perek of Bavmetzia, highlights a number of these, where it's clear that, you know, that first the Gemara cites the Machlokas, and then the Gemara gives the Perush. So you assume when you have Rabbi Yehuda Amar X, you know, when Rav Ploni Amar X and Rav Ploni Amoni Amar Y, And then the Gemara says again, Rav Ploni Amar X gives the Hesber, Rav Ploni Amoni Amar Y and gives the Hesber. That's the Hesber of the Gemara. Okay, so then, and sometimes, by the way, the continuation of the Sugya doesn't know that yet. Sometimes that piece is filled in later after the Maskanas HaSugya, and sometimes we've shown and point this out. That if you, once you're given the reason for the Machlokas, the entire Shakla Vitaria that follows may not make sense until you realize that that was filled in later by the Masada of the Sugya. And Rishonim will occasionally point this out.
The Masada of the Sugya made it up?
No, it's based upon the Maskana. He fills it in. In other words, in this case... Correct. No, but the point is, the Gemara says, Rav Amar X, Shmuel Amar Y. Rav Amar X, reason A. Shmuel Amar Y, reason B. So the second half there, the reasons, you know, the repetition, is the Gemara filling it in later, based upon the Maskana of the Sugya.
So the Shakla V'Taya really happened.
Often the Shakla V'Taya is not... If there's an Amar Lay, yes, it happened. If it's not Amar Lay, it's the Gemara Shakla V'Taya. So in this case, it's...
So why would if the Gemara couldn't have done both, which one did it do?
No. Sometimes the Gemara has a machlokas, and then they have a discussion as to what the machlokas is about. And it's not the Amoraim talking; it's the Gemara talking. Or later Amoraim, it could be later Amoraim too. It's just not the original Amoraim. And then when you go back and you find that the maskana of the Gemara was incorporated as, you know, Rav Amar X, Shmuel Amar Y, Rav Amar X, the reason, Shmuel Amar Y, the reason. And when you read this statement, you know, in order, the discussion of the Gemara will no longer make any sense if Rav gave that reason and Shmuel gave that reason. You wouldn't have asked some of the questions and pursued some of the reason that you had. Now, what's the answer to the question? The answer to the question is that in terms of the composition of the sugya, first you had the Amoraic Machlokas, then you have the Svar that the Gemara develops and the Shakla Tari and so on. It gets to a Maskana, and now they've gone back and sort of added in like cliff notes or something, you know, the foreshadowing is what the Maskana. If you want to know, if you stop here, you want the abridged version, Rav holds X because of the reason A, Shmuel holds Y because of reason B, and if you stop there, you know what the Maskana of the Gemara is.
It's like they did it eight.
The order of the Gemara is not the chronological order. The Maskana of the Gemara has been reincorporated into an earlier point. So that's why it's always important just to realize that this type of a sequence of Rav and Shmuel, you know, two Amoraim, and then repeated with the explanation is not the Amoraim speaking, it's the Gemara speaking. And not every sugya doesn't matter. In this sugya, we know how the Gemara knew it. Is it conceivable? It's wrong? I don't want to say is it conceivable, it's wrong. Is it conceivable? There's another interpretation. Yes, that's why the Balei Tosfos point out that sometimes you have a machlokas asugyas, because it's the second part that they're arguing about. There's some classic sugyas. You know, I shomer shemasa, the shomer being one of them, where I believe you have a bayin, I think it's a bayin rav, I could be wrong, maybe it's early, Rav and Shmuel, where it's presented one way in one sugya, and another sugya is a different assumption, because the second part wasn't part of the statement of Rav and Shmuel. So in this sugya, it's not that we're going to propose an alternative explanation. It's just that that's a tool you need to be aware of when you're reading a Gemara. Okay. So now the Gemara says, Velohi.
Velohi, Sinon, Natai Che Adate de Puga, de Kala, Lo Natai Che Adate de Korah.
All right, so the Gemara says that, you know what? At stone you plant adaita the pugla. Again, did the Gemara not know that originally? What they originally think? Did they think that you planted? This is what I meant before. What was the Gemara's havamina? The Gemara's havamina was what? That you plant radishes, and the only thing you use in a radish is what we call the radish, and nonetheless it should be a shahako kasofa lahachas. Or did the Gemara think originally that people plant stone for the primary purpose of the leaves? Some type of a cabbage or a lettuce. It's a cabbage thing. And then the Gemara said, you know what? No, people want the radish also just as much.
Shmuel.
I understand. What I'm saying...
Shmuel, it sounds like Shmuel's only consideration was about sofilacho. There was no habamin in terms of...
I hear what you're saying. You're arguing that it really wasn't even that they ate the...
Yeah,
okay.
And now all of a sudden the Gemara is bringing in this new consideration. Meaning like it's a
rape. No. I know that for Shmuel, but I wonder when the Gemara says what it says, does the Gemara think that people typically plant it for the lettuce, and now we also realize they plant it for the pugla? Or no, is the Gemara just saying, is the Gemara's answer just, that is the fruit? Okay, it could be. It may very well be. Just when I read the Gemara, it struck me as odd.
It's odd because it's as if they're speaking like within Shmuel, like saying, No, when Shmuel agreed to
With Rabbi Yehuda, he said,
"Kavasa v'stavra." When he agreed to Rabbi Yehuda, he really shouldn't have agreed to it because there's a difference between these two. But that's not true. He agreed to it because he was working within his own reach.
I understand, but what did why did Shmuel not recognize the fact that the tzinon is the fruit? Is it just because it didn't matter? Okay, but remember, the Gemara gives its chiluk about Adaita, but you have to realize the chiluk is so obvious that you wonder why Shmuel did Shmuel not. Now remember, Shmuel didn't agree with Rabbi Yehuda.
At first.
No, I'm not sure. I don't. The Gemara doesn't say. The Gemara doesn't say Chazar Bey. What's that? No. The fact that Shmuel says Mistabra, Kvasech Mistabra, doesn't mean he didn't have an answer. He had an answer. We don't know what it was. The Gemara provides us an answer.
Who says he had an answer?
Because the Gemara, I'll even take Shlomo's point. The Gemara does not seem to be under the impression that Shmuel was Chazar Bey.
But the Gemara at the end says, even though, what did it say?
Even though Shmuel praised Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha is still like Shmuel.
Okay, so Shmuel but rejected
if he had actually been Chozer Bo, then both the Amoraim would have said Shahakol, and whatever the Svar of the Gemara had was wrong. It's strange, but they're assuming Shmuel did Paskin the way Shmuel said originally. It's just he's pointing out to Rabbi Yehuda, you know, it's a nice point. You're reading this, so you know, it's like I tell you, it's a really nice read of the Suya, but it's wrong.
That's what Mistabra definitely.
No, I think when Shmuel says it, when someone says it in this context about his opponent, but doesn't seem to retract, that's I think what it means. When two Amorim are arguing and he says Mistaber Kavase de Ploni, then you assume that's the way he holds. The only reason we assume Shmuel doesn't hold that way is because Shmuel didn't hold that way, and he doesn't seem to really be Chozer. He just seems to be praising Rabbi Yehuda's position. Ezra?
Isn't it usually the stamma of the Gemara who will say, oh, and it's a knockout to Shmuel anyway, so maybe they just twisted it. They saw that he admitted, but they didn't say knockout. They said, oh, but we still like the other way, so
I can't disprove that. I can't disprove that, but I have no reason necessarily. I have no evidence in that direction either. David?
Yeah, it was along the same line. It seems like Shmuel accepted the fact that it's known. Seems to fall in the same category. It's also Sofal Hakcho, but nevertheless, he knew somewhere that was
somehow it was different.
That it received not necessarily that it was different, but that he knew that it received the verb pre adama. So it leaves him with an outstanding question. And then the Gemara steps in to defend Shmuel because they wanted.
Or to explain why was Shmuel not Chozer Bo in favor of Yehuda?
Right,
if he thought Mistaber Kavase. So what was the difference?
Right, and so then the Gemara fashions a difference.
Yes.
But it still leaves us with the qualification that Sofal Hakcho for Shmuel received a shackle.
No, because he says he agrees that Snowden it doesn't.
I mean, but that's for a separate consideration, which the Gemara then.
I don't think it's a question of a separate. I think that the Gemara, once you say, we're saying that Snowden, even though it's Sofal Hakcho, it's because it's Daita Pugla, therefore you make a prayer patama. So that means. If it is, so what's the din? If so for the hakshos v'ein dato alav, you make a shahakol. If so for the hakshos v'dato alav, you make a bar priyadama, which means so for the hakshos is irrelevant.
But that assumes that the Gemara's explanation for the difference is what Shmuel held.
We don't know for sure what Shmuel held. I agree. So we're talking about what the Gemara thinks Shmuel's chiluk was. Maybe he had a different chiluk. I don't know.
But has positive Shmuel gave this answer and he gave the reason and then we're saying
no, he gave the kasha. He gave the kasha. He presented the issue. It's a fact. Both of them are sofa lahakshos. He says what you're saying is logical because if you want to make an analogy, look at Snown, where you make up your pradem and that's sofa lahakshos. If there's an answer for Shmuel, Shmuel's really arguing, he obviously understands some kind of chiluk. Even though both of them are sofa lahakshos, one of them is X and one of them is not X. And that's why one of them is shakal and one of them is very priyadama. Once you've said that, so. Shmuel's havamina and his why mistabra kavase, even though the halach is not kavase, the Rabbi Yehuda, from Shmuel's perspective, is because they're both sofa lahakshos. It obviously means if Shmuel argued Rabbi Yehuda, he rejected that being as the determining factor. Otherwise, you have to assume he accepted Rabbi Yehuda, and it's just the Gemara that's ignoring it. Now, I'm not assuming that way, as I can't prove it. David?
Another question that I have is what does it mean, adata the hafi?
How much is it adata?
Well, what I mean is. is it that you plant it for that purpose, or that in general the plant produces for that purpose? The normal deco produces dates.
Right.
It doesn't grow itself to produce fruit called hearts.
It's what people plant it for. Not the inish adaita de. So the point is, why do people plant? Why do people, domesticate it and plant it for? What do they use it for? So the fact is, people do not generally plant the deco for the korah. People do generally plant, what's known for the pogla. Maybe not only the pogla, but certainly for the pogla too. Ezra.
When they say so pelagius, that means unedible.
Yes, Rashi I think says. Uvashana shnei miskasha v'nasa eitz.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
There's a
K. That's in the next one. Stone sofer shlahak shem ena tosho beitahu miskasha ke'eitz. Okay. Fine. So now, what does the Gemara say? It challenges this premise. Go ahead, Ezra. V'chol hecha. I'm sorry. So we just said that is that true? If that's not what the primary purpose, let's say, people plant it for, you have to make a you don't make a bracha on it. I mean, you don't make, what does lo mevarchin aleh mean?
You only make a shakol.
It's a very interesting way of saying it. It's like saying shakol is not really, that's not making a bracha on it. It's sort of, it's like shakol is just shakol is not a bracha. It's clear shakol is not a bracha tailored for the food that it's not tailored for the food that you're eating. You're giving a shakol is a bracha to the Ribono Shel Olam. It's not a bracha on the food. Almost. What? I understand, but Shmuel just said shakol, right? So in Lomar Chen, that means yes, you could say aleh. You're making a bracha to the Ribono Shel Olam, but you're not really making a bracha on it. How do we know what?
You don't make a bracha at all.
Because Shmuel just said Shmuel just said you make a shakol. No, unless it's mazik, I don't think anybody says you don't make a bracha. I don't know. Did they say there also you don't make? I think they do. I think
you should have mentioned that the nuts.
No, I thought you don't make a bari preyata, and not that you don't make a bracha.
It's
bitter,
and therefore it doesn't get
mazik. Oh, yes. Okay, yes. Fine. Yes. The shkeid mamarim. Yes. Okay. Go ahead. So now the question is that true? Vare. Okay, so the Olin looks like, by the way, it's not a Mishnah. Unfortunately, it's a Braisa, and I think it appears only here. There's nothing in the Mesoros HaShas. This is it. It appears here, and then further down on the Amud. What, Tanya Tanan? I didn't look, but the truth is something to be aware of. You all know what's the difference between Tanya and Tanan? Right, it's not true, but I mean it's true most of the cases, but of course, so there are so many times where the Nusach, I think Shuir Gon indicates that distinction, but there are so many times that the distinction doesn't hold, that at a certain point you begin to believe the rule is not really a rule, and why some is Tanan and Tanya, I think we just don't know. Excuse me, Weeder does, and it begins with a W, okay? All right. Okay, anyway. So the Braisa says that on the Olin, which are either the flower leaves, either the leaves, the kafresin, what's left over once the fruit opens, or maybe the petals, and on the tamaras, which are the original fruits, Omer be pri adama, but avionos, and the kafrisin, okay, the kafrisin, which are the leaves that actually protect the berry at an early stage, on the kafrisin and the avionos, you make a boy priates. They have the status of pri for the purposes of bracha. Okay, so what do you see? What do you see from this? What is the kasha from? The kasha could be twofold, really.
It's
that first of all, we don't say shakol even though your intentions were otherwise.
No, the question could be asked.
You eat the other objects.
Whether it's ha'etz or adamah, it's a question of shakol.
Firstly, what is the pircha? What is pircha? Very strange. Rashi says
it's the fruit.
It's the fruit.
But it doesn't help. Which fruit?
No. That I understand. He means the aviona. No. The problem with that is that pircha is not the correct term. Pircha would be the petals. If anything, that might be the olin. But that's not why people plant it. So let's assume, accept Rashi's interpretation that pircha is called is a reference to the aviona, and that's why people plant it. And nonetheless,
wait, so assuming like Rashi.
We'll assume like Rashi for the moment.
Well, I mean, what's the, like, it says in those other, the Rashi says pircha with a hey. Does that change anything, or that doesn't sound?
Nah, I don't think so.
What's the convenience that it should last, maybe, not the
pircha itself. So you think that the pircha, as opposed to is being a verb. Except that I think that's feminine, and slav is probably masculine. Should be adaita de parach. If it's pircha, then it's then it can be either the, remember it's Bavli Aramaic, it can be either the blossom or blossom or fruit, whatever, fruit, the fruit. Yeah.
I mean, is there any room to say that the Gemara might have the Havamina that everything on the Salaf should be shakal because it's planted for ornamental purposes, meaning that its main purpose is the prafim? I mean, I'm not sure if that's true or not, but it seems to be what it's saying. Adat the pircha is planted for the flower.
So
and you would have thought then that you would make a shakal on everything that you do eat because it's not the normal.
I hear what you're saying.
I'm not sure if that conforms to reality, though.
We're defining the pircha as the flower.
Well, no. Rashi says it's the fruit. It's the aviona. The problem is it's not what the word pircha means. Right? The word pircha means... Did you look? Anybody look up what the Rashash, why he says it? No, he doesn't. It's a pretty bland word. Where do they print the Rashash? Do they print the Rashash separately? I'm sorry, Chaim. Do they print? Sometimes they print the Rashash separately. No.
They have everything in the Gemara.
Unless it's just like an interchangeable word, kind of.
Oh, it's
like
on the bottom. Here it is. One second.
Yeah, you know the
Kentari Torah one second. So he points at the problem later that. What does he think it solves the problem? See later Adata.
Maybe it's pure with like a mopping hay. In other words, it's what flowers from it, meaning the as opposed to the pure.
Yeah,
pure
but
it's, mean the actual
but again, but slav is masculine. That's the problem.
That's expected in the beginning if it's pure off, but it's flower.
I don't see what he quotes a Gemara later where it sounds like. You know, he points at the end of the sugya. The perach seems to be indeed the petals.
Because petita means caprice.
Okay, so I don't know, but for the moment, let's assume like Rashi says. So the Gemara's question could be from one of two things. It could either be from the fact that on the Olam of the Tamaris you still make a Bari Pri Adama, and that's probably where the question is coming from, as opposed to the Avionos and the Kafrisin you make a Bari Pri Eitz, the assumption, the fact that you make a Bari Pri Eitz Mamish, is that the Kafrisin are also considered, for whatever reason, part of the pre. So it would seem that the Gemara's question, although it's not Mochrach, is from the fact that on Tamaros and Olin, you make a Bari Pri Adama.
Wait,
so you see, I'm sorry?
Wait, what's the difference between the Tamaros and the Kafris?
The Tamaros are the earliest, the immature buds where you can eat the whole thing. when you let them go a little further, you weren't here for the beginning, so we went over the botany. Maybe you'll ask me tomorrow in Seder.
Did Joel say that
it's
another word for
slack? Nitzpah is, yeah. Hold on one second.
That makes no sense. Why would you grow it sloth for its sloth?
Yeah, that doesn't. He says pircha, but it does sound like that. It just doesn't. It doesn't make any sense. Then it has it. Adait ben adait ben gemara doesn't make sense. Adait the pircha. Right, Chaim said that you're planting a tzlaf, a daitet tzlaf. So let's assume for the moment.
The tree is named for this part of it.
It's also the pircha, we know what pircha is. It's not a specific, it's a generic term. Okay, so the Gemara says now, the Gemara says that, so you see that you make bari pri adama even on things that are not the primary purpose of planting. So now the Gemara finally comes on to the following explanation. So what is that answer? How does he answer the question? So what does the Gemara do on its own? Forget what Rashi explains. Before you get to Rashi, what does the Gemara say on its own? The Gemara originally assumed that when we say, and now maybe you have to go back, but it said that earlier. What changed from the Hava Mina to the Maskana of the Gemara? We originally said like this, the answer for the problem of Shmuel is that Sinon, you plant adaita de pudla. Dikla, you don't plant adaita de kura. So then we say, is that true? But slaf, you plant adaita de percha. Not adaita de shuta, let's say. So the Gemara said, and why should you make a shuta is presumably the tomorrows and all in. So the Gemara then asks, so the Gemara says, why do you make a bar priyadam? And the answer is no. People are not the adaita deshuta, they're not the adaita the korah. So what has changed? And what caused the Gemara to change from one to the other? What has the Gemara added that we didn't know in the first answer? Chaim?
Oh, it just said that what we thought was approved from the Tzalaf, that here we make a bracha on either Aisa or Adama on parts that we thought that were not intended for when they grew. And now we're saying that really they are intended for, and that's
so,
why they
so
get
you
a
mean the machlokas, or the problem of the problem of the Machshon was that he didn't know why they planted tzlaf, and the Mitarit is just answering that.
Well, no, they're saying that the reason why those do get hadam or eitz is because there really is an intent for them.
But why did they ask it? So you're saying that the Machshon thought there was no intent, and Nachum Yitzchak said there is intent. That's what it's about.
Seemingly.
Now, Rashi does not read it that way, and I understand why Rashi doesn't read it that way, because then the sugya has really added nothing. It just seems like somebody got confused over a specific mitzvah.
Well, it could very easily go back to the fact that by pulling off the side things, it'd be the tamaros or the kafrisin or the olin, you're not going to permanently damage the
plant. Wait. So that's what Rashi is in. That's where Rashi's coming from. Now, this Rashi, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says that. Slaf nati inshi adaita deshuta lechol es alim ves atmaros, and you see how Rashi understood the Gemara's kasha. It was on alim atmaros, so it was in the bari pri adama, not on the kafrisin. Lechol es alim ves atmaros she'enem imatin es ilan bekach. They don't damage the tree that way. In other words, you may destroy that one particular bud, but the rest of the slaf continues to produce its fruit. However, diklo nati inshi adaita lechol es akora she'ochol mamayin anfe ilan. It's not only mamayin anfe ilan; in many cases, it just destroys the tree.
Like a lack of negative kavanah.
Correct. In other words, that's what I would, in a certain sense, the Gemara doesn't formulate it that way, but I think that's what's going on. In other words, but it's another way of saying it, that the Gemara originally thought that has to be your primary kavanah, and then the Gemara's maskana is no. As long as when we say originally when we said that lo nati inish dikla daita the kura, man, that's not what you're thinking about. That's really not your purpose. But in effect, when the Gemara comes to the Maskana, what lo nati in a shadai tikura means, they dafka do not want the kura to be taken. As it's not just that they don't plant it for that reason, it's they dafka do not intend to take it, because otherwise it damages the tree. Shlomo?
When did Rafi ever see a palm tree? That he would know that it destroys the tree? You're just like making that assumption.
Who doesn't know that?
No, so then how would he read that? Meaning, for him, it's like a fetish. There's no reason to read the Gemara that way.
There is, because the Gemara doesn't make sense if you don't see something as having changed.
Fine, but meaning, how can he assume that about the tree if really?
He may have known what a kura was.
He never saw.
There may be, maybe, I didn't notice anything in the Aruch, but maybe in the Gonam and Aruch Rashi had some tradition.
So kura is a beam.
What's that?
Kura.
No, that's a different word, Korah. That's a Hebrew word, Korah.
No.
Probably not. I don't think the heart of the palm, even when it hardened, was used as a beam. I don't know, but I doubt it. I wouldn't even be surprised if the vocalization is Kura, not Korah. I don't know for sure, but... Shalom?
So, is it possible to read that really Rav Yitzchak is talking about this machlokes between the Yehuda and Shmuel, and he's just coming to defend Shmuel's position in the Gemara, though he happened to choose a language that neither Shmuel or Yehuda had used, like he hasn't used it. So the Gemara is just filling in Shakla Vitaria to get to Rav Nachman in order to put it.
That's fine, but you still have to explain when the Gemara filled in the Shakla Vitaria what was different between the Shakla Vitaria and what Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak added. Granted, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak might be the end conclusion, but if you're going to add in a part of the Shakla Vitaria, you have to understand Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak in such a way that when you set it up that way, he's adding something. As it's concealed, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, you could argue, simply meant to say, people planted Adait. I actually take that back, and you can't say that, Shalom. You can't say what you're saying. In fact, this is a case where it appears that the Shakla Vitaria of the Gemara is early. This is a stem of the Gemara that's early. Rav Nachman Yitzchak is Rav Abaye's contemporary. It appears to be already an early stem of the Gemara, because otherwise Rav Nachman's response, without the Shakla Vitaria, Tzlaf Nati in the Shaddai to the X. But Dikla Lanai to the Kura makes no sense unless he's responding to that question. So even if you want to say that some of the Shakla Vitaria, the question of the Gemara, it's going to be very hard to eliminate what's in between. I think you have to assume that he's responding to the stem of the Gemara.
Well, I mean, you could just say that he's trying to add the idea of that. So he's not...
The problem is that I understand that, but it has to be in response to something.
Meaning that he should have used
Snown. Snown, that's correct. If he were responding directly to Shmuel's problem, he would have responded with Snown. He seems to be aware of a discussion of Tzlaf. So... I'm sure Halivni could find a way he would twist and say why it's not, you know, an early stam, but I think that the simple presentation, you know, unless you can establish a context in which Rav Nachman made his statement independently relating to a different problem, I'm going to assume that the stam of the Gemara is early. I mean, early means fourth generation, which is early by scholarly standards. okay, fine. So the maskana of the Gemara then is that Akura the Dikla, you make a shahakol like Shmuel. The reason for that is because people do not plant the dekel for the purposes of the kura. Rashi explains, and I'm not sure that I have to check, but I don't know if anybody explains any differently, that the kura, if you take the kura, the dikla, you do armamayitilan, you do damage the tree. If we understand correctly, you actually destroy the tree. Whereas the other parts of the caperberry bush, even if that's not the primary purpose is the aviyona. Nonetheless, if you eat the tamaro, so you eat the alin, it doesn't destroy the bush. You know, that one particular fruit may not produce and turn into an aviyon anymore, but the rest of your bush is still intact, and therefore someone might very well plan, you know, to take some of the buds when they're very immature, might plan to eat the almond, even if it's going to prevent there being an aviyon out because it doesn't actually damage the tree. David?
If that's the rationale for the second set, should it be the rationale for the first set as well?
For?
I mean, when it argues about radish.
Yes, in other words, the maskana, the Gemara, for the Gemara, the Gemara's perspective, the same is true by the radishes then present the problem. People plant the radishes, so for the hakshas doesn't matter. People plant radishes at day to the pogla, and that's why, regardless, you make a bari pri ha-dama on them. And people, yes?
If the rationale is because it destroys the tree, so by eating the radish, you're destroying the radish plant as well.
No, but the point is, what else are you going to do with the radish? That is why the radish is grown.
Unless you're saying that the leaves were edible.
And if you take the leaves are destroyed. You can't ask that question by a tree. Radishes you expect to replant. That's normal.
But if
a tree you don't want to replant. You don't want to destroy the tree.
If you eat the leaves of the radish,
yes.
But you leave the bulb in the ground, would it not grow more leaves during a season?
I'd have to find that more.
It would still get hard, or you're still going to lose, at some point, you'll lose the radish.
Right,
the radish isn't going to stand
it. Again, I think that the answer is people do. It is true. People normally do plant and eat the radish. People do not normally take the heart of the dekel if it destroys it.
Then the
that would be a real delicacy.
Then the rationale that Rashi has for the latter differentiation, that one destroys the tree where the other one doesn't, is not applicable. That rationale is not applicable.
No, but it is, because the point, it's not just one destroys it, it's that the cost... Okay. The cost-benefit analysis is extremely negative by the dekel. It's not by its known. Its known affects only the one thing that you're doing, you know, the one fruit, the one set of leaves. It doesn't affect all the other radishes in your field, right? In other words, this whole unit is a closed unit. The dekel, potentially there are lots of pears that grow from the dekel, which will never happen anymore. Okay. Fine. Okay. Tomorrow we'll begin the next. Tomorrow is Tuesday, right? So we'll continue on with the issue of tzlaf. I will tomorrow just quickly look at Rabbeinu Yonah and just Tosfos, just to, you know, the other issues that they raise in relationship with the almonds and so on and so forth.
Lunch
was today. Nobody came.
I was a rabbi without a student. I'm sorry. Not nobody.
Sorry.
Came. You know, two very important people came, but. But I assume Monday's the regular thing, you know, I assume everybody forgot or something.